Greetings and welcome to Season 1, Episode 3 of That's What I Think, But I Could Be Wrong. My name is Todd Lorenz, and I am your host. I think cryptids exist that science should recognize. I don't think Lee Harvey Oswald had a thing to do with the murder of John F. Kennedy. I don't think we know the truth about what happened on 9/11. I think the United States should meddle in foreign affairs as little as possible. And I believe the vast majority of politicians are corrupt. But hey, that's just what I think. And I could be wrong.
That's what I think, but I could be wrong. That's what I thought when I wrote this song. I say what I believe and I say it's strong. That's what I think, but I could be wrong.
Hey, not a bad song, huh? Hey, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for streaming. Thanks for paying attention. I appreciate it. If you would, drop a like or a rating or whatever it takes to get my podcast to grow, and I'll appreciate that more. Now then, let's move on to this week's topic. It seems like there is consistently and constantly a lot of bad going on in the world. There are moments of brightness, moments of light, moments of beauty, moments of goodness. But all we really ever hear about in the world are the moments of pain, agony, darkness, evil, the bad side of human nature. And that begs a question for me. Are we, human beings, inherently violent? That's what we're going to explore. I thought about the best way to format this show, and I settled on classifying arguments or ideas on this topic into pro and con. I also decided that I wouldn't just cover arguments that classified us as violent. I think that evil also lends to that discussion. Are we inherently violent? Are we inherently evil? Not the same thing, but both topics worth a discussion. You don't necessarily have one without the other. You could make the argument that there is certainly violence without evil, but I would say that evil necessitates violence. And if there is an outbreak of violence, it often involves evil on some level. If violence arises out of a need for self-defense, it's because someone is trying to hurt you or your loved ones. Isn't that evil? But let's get it going. Pros and cons. Let's start with a huge pro with the idea that we are inherently violent. We are a warlike species. History shows that we are nearly constantly at war. And to that end, I found a timeline online, timeline documenting war through the ages. I'll post the image or perhaps just a link to the image on the show notes page on my website. If you're watching the YouTube version of this show, then I hope to have the image up as you're listening. I considered going over the timeline in depth, then thought about summarizing it, but really, the best I can do, without boring you to tears, by reading each name and the time frame in which it occurred, is simply to say this. Beginning in approximately 1274 BC and going right up to today, 2018, we have constantly been at war. I would go so far as to say that there has probably not been a human being who has lived a lifespan of, say, 60 to 75 years, give or take, during that time frame, who has not had a war going on during their lifetime. Seriously. It happens that often. It's been that pervasive. What does that tell you? You tell me we're not violent or evil just based on that. Now, if you want to get into the causes of war, that's a whole other story. I expect I will do a show on that at some point. You want to know what causes war? To me, it's simple. Money. Money or scarcity of resources. And I suppose you can just further narrow that down to greed. It's just that simple. Somebody always wants something that somebody else has. I I'm sitting here laughing, but it's true, man. There's a book called War is a Racket by General Smedley Butler. It's really more of an extended pamphlet than a book, and I expect that at some point I will cover it as part of the show about war that I may do. But he basically traces all wars back to money and who profits. You know, follow the money. Follow the rich white men. Well, it's not always the rich white men, but follow the money. So based on the amount of time we as a species spend at war, it kind of looks like we're inherently violent. Or it lends to that fact anyway. That's a pro, certainly. So what else might lead one to conclude that human beings are inherently violent? Well, let's take a look at crime statistics. This comes from the Bureau of Justice Statistics. In 2016, U.S. residents aged 12 or older experienced 5.7 million violent victimizations. That sounds horrible, doesn't it? Or 21.1 victimizations per 1,000 persons. Well, that doesn't sound quite as bad, does it? Unless you happen to be one of the 21.1 people. Overall, about 1.3% of the population experienced one or more violent victimizations. That seems low, right? 1.3% of the population doesn't seem too bad. And again, unless you're part of that 1.3%. These crimes included rape or sexual assault, robbery, and aggravated and simple assault. Additionally, there were an estimated 15.9 million property victimizations in 2016, or 109.4 victimizations per 1,000 U.S. households, an estimated 8.8% of households experienced at least one property victimization. So what does that mean in terms of our discussion? Well, we do obviously have crime in this country, and potentially violent crime. Crimes against property, not necessarily violent, but there's certainly the potential. If somebody robs your house when you're not home, that's not necessarily violent, though you would probably feel violated. But what if you were home? Certainly the potential for violence is there and probably certain. But those numbers seem to indicate that, no, we are not inherently violent. Those are fairly low numbers. I went with the year 2016 because that year is the most recent full year of data that is available from both the FBI and the Bureau of Justice Statistics. However, listen to this. This is from an article posted in the Pew Research Center titled, Five Facts About Crime in the U.S. Number one, violent crime in the United States has fallen sharply over the past quarter century. Isn't that interesting? The two most commonly cited sources of crime statistics in the U.S. both show a substantial decline in the violent crime rate since it peaked in the early 1990s. One is an annual report of the FBI of serious crimes reported to police. The other is an annual survey of more than 90,000 households conducted by the Bureau of Justice Statistics, which asks Americans ages 12 and older whether they were victims of a crime, regardless of whether they reported those crimes to the police. Using the FBI numbers, the violent crime rate fell 48% between 1993 and 2016. That seems really significant, right? Well, how about this? Using the Bureau of Justice Statistics data, the rate fell 74% during that span. How's that for a big deal, right? It is important to note the FBI reported a 7% increase in the violent crime between 2014 and 2016, including a 20% rise in the murder rate, from 4.4 to 5.3 murders per 100,000 residents. The BJS figures do not show an increase in the violent crime rate between 2014 and 2016, but they do not count murders. Their figures for 2016 also reflect a survey redesign, making it difficult to compare directly to prior years. So there you go. It's interesting, right? Maybe it's all just kind of cyclical. Item number two on this list, property crime has declined significantly over the long term. Property crime includes offenses such as burglary, theft, and motor vehicle theft, and is generally far more common than violent crime. Again, the statistics on property crime, not necessarily reflective of violence, but I would say that the potential is there depending on circumstances. Item number 3 in this article is interesting. Public perceptions about crime in the U.S. often don't align with the data. In other words, we don't always take facts into account, or maybe facts aren't reported to us. You know, news, I don't watch news anymore. I just kind of can't. If there's something going on I want to know about, I'll search out information on the web as a rule. Maybe look for something. I can't even remember the last time I went looking for something on TV. Maybe the radio. Why don't I watch TV news? Well, if it bleeds, it leads. They are not in the reporting business anymore. They're in the entertainment business. So they publicize, they go with things that bring in ratings, which increases their ad revenue, which increases their revenue. You get the point. It becomes all about money, not providing a public service. And it wasn't always that way. But anyway, about the perception, opinion surveys regularly find that Americans believe crime is up nationally, even when the data show it's down. There you go. Item number 4 on this list, there are large geographic variations in crime rates, so that makes sense, depending on poverty levels. Let's see. In 2016, there were more than 600 violent crimes per 100,000 residents in Alaska, Nevada, New Mexico, and Tennessee, states that aren't all that populated, you would think, or at least not densely populated. By contrast, Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont had rates below 200 violent crimes per 100,000 residents. And while Chicago has drawn widespread attention for its soaring murder total in recent years, its murder rate in 2016, 28 murders and non-negligent manslaughters per 100,000 residents, was less than half of the rate in St. Louis, which is 60 per 100,000, and below the rate of Baltimore, 51 per 100,000. How about that? The FBI notes that various factors might influence a particular area's crime rate, including its population density and economic connections. And then last, number 5, most crimes are not reported to the police, and most reported crimes are not solved. Yeah, at this point, if your property is robbed, you call the police mainly for what? So you have documentation to file with your insurance company. That's pretty much it, right? You don't expect them to actually find anything, do you? In its annual survey, the BJS asked victims of crime whether they reported that crime to the police. In 2016, only 42% of the violent crime tracked was reported. In the much more common category of property crime, only about a third, approximately 36%, was reported. So on the whole, we are apparently in a downswing of violent crime and property crime. That's good, right? Also lends to the fact that we are not inherently violent, at least perhaps not in this country, regardless of what you see on the air these days about mass murders and guns and the Never Again movement or whatever the heck that is. Not going to talk about that here. Definitely another show. What about the crime rate around the world? Well, for that, we will look at crime indices on a website called numbeo.com, N-U-M-B-E-O. They base their indices on surveys from visitors to the website. Questions used are similar to many similar scientific and government surveys. They filter surveys to eliminate potential spam, and they use data up to 36 months old. A crime index is an estimation of overall level of crime in a given city or country. Crime levels lower than 20 are considered very low. Those between 20 and 40 are low. Those between 40 and 60 are moderate. And crime levels between 60 and 80 are high. Anything over 80, considered very high. Might qualify that as put your head between your knees and kiss your backside goodbye. Safety index is the direct opposite. So let's take a look. Worst country or country with the highest level of crime or the highest crime index? Any guesses? I was a little surprised. Venezuela, with a crime rate of 82.59. I'll just kind of quickly go through the top 10. Number 2, Papua New Guinea, 79.95. 3, Honduras, 78.89. 4, South Africa, 75.71. 5, Trinidad and Tobago, 72.22. Brazil, 70.55 is number 6. Number 7, El Salvador, 69.72. 8 is Bangladesh at 68.52. 9 is Namibia, 68.22. And 10 is Syria, 67.74. Just below that at 11 is Jamaica at 66.87. So I guess if you like to vacation in Jamaica, be careful, or at least be careful of where in Jamaica you go. The United States comes in with a crime index of 49.58. And again, that puts us as between 40 and 60, meaning we're considered moderate. The list has 115 countries. We come in at number 35. Many other countries have a lower crime index and higher safety index, including Iran, Sweden, Ethiopia, Chile, India, Ireland, Iraq, Australia, the United Kingdom, Canada, Turkey, Tunisia, Spain, Saudi Arabia, list goes on. What about the country with the highest safety rate and lowest crime index? Any guesses? Japan, with a crime index of 13.10, 13.10. That's really significant. Safety index is the highest, 86.9. United Arab Emirates is fourth, 18.75 crime index, 81.25 safety index. How about that? In my opinion, these statistics lend credence to the idea that we are not inherently violent, but rather violence is dependent upon location and, more specifically, circumstances. The worst countries are probably the worst economically speaking, and culture has a lot to do with it. It's been said that in Japan, criminals expect to be caught. Therefore, the crime index seems appropriately to be the lowest. Not that I'm an expert on Japanese culture or crime, but anyway, it's a wide range of numbers, right? You go from the lowest crime rate of 13.1 all the way up to the worst at 82.59. So that gives credence to the idea that we are not inherently violent, at least when it comes to crime. Now, this site does not differentiate between violent and nonviolent crime. It just is this label of crime. So take that for whatever it's worth. While doing research for this show, I found quite a bit of interesting information and viewpoints. One article I came across is on a site called Listverse, and its title is 10 Reasons Humans Are Naturally Evil. Seems relevant, doesn't it? Now, I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'll just kind of go over some bullet points and give you the 10 reasons. Number 10, constant wars. We've already kind of discussed that, haven't we? That particular section ends with this question. Are we warring because we have to, or because we like it? Well, I don't think it's necessarily that we have to, and I don't think it's that we like it on any level, at least not your normal human being. I think there are people in the world who enjoy violence, or at least will use it to exploit other people, particularly if they can send, or if they can convince others to go out and do their bidding. Think about that for a second. Number 9, internet trolls and bullies. You don't really need to do any more than spend a little bit of time on social media, particularly Facebook and Twitter, to discover that trolls are disgusting. People pick fights for whatever reason, and even if they're not trolls, you'll see online arguments degenerate in a hurry from a rational discussion to name-calling. And I have a bit of a thought about it. I believe that the internet is perhaps the greatest two-way communication device ever created by man, and all it really does is enable us to communicate more quickly. It allows us to be who we are and interact with others almost instantaneously. That's it. People that are jerks or have a desire to be mean will do so. Those who don't won't. It's that simple. The jerks or the trolls stand out because they get attention. Moving along. Number 8. Chimps are violent. I'll discuss this more a little bit later. There's some interesting research about this. Suffice it to say that chimps make war, they engage in cannibalism, and they eliminate competition for resources. There's a different kind of chimp or species of ape called the bonobo that are not nearly as violent as chimpanzees. It's speculated that one of the reasons is that the bonobos evolved without the need to compete for food. Makes the difference, doesn't it? If we didn't have to fight for resources on some level, how violent would we actually be? Number 7. Hunter-gatherers were violent. Anthropologists say 2/3 of modern hunter-gatherers are in a state of nearly constant tribal warfare, and 90% go to war once a year where they lose about 0.5% of their population, and they have a high homicide rate, which results in the deaths of 25-30% of adult males. There's a common notion that if it wasn't for agriculture and industrialization, we'd all be stress-free and hanging out in hammocks. It appears our modern lifestyle isn't to blame for our violent tendencies, since people who have clearly avoided the industrial and technological revolutions are just as brutal as the rest of us. Perhaps more. Number 6. Some have the warrior gene. The most convincing evidence that at least some of us are inherently violent is the existence of the so-called warrior gene. And while everyone has it, in a certain percentage of the population, this gene exhibits low or no activity. Those who have a low-performing gene are more prone to aggression and violent behavior, hence the name. Just having it doesn't guarantee you'll be violent, yet it does mean you are predisposed towards aggression and impulsive decisions. Researchers have found those who have troubled upbringings and the warrior gene are most likely to act out negatively. Huh. Kinda sounds like a combination of nature and nurture makes us who we are, doesn't it? Number 5. Violence as entertainment. In some ways, we aren't much different than the ancient Romans with their gladiator games and fascination with blood and gore. For instance, primetime TV is full of shoot-'em-up cop shows and gruesome crime scenes. Most news agencies stick with the if it bleeds, it leads philosophy. We talked about that a bit. And one of the most violent sports in existence, mixed martial arts fighting, has been dubbed the fastest growing sport in the world. Without a doubt, we have a definite attraction to violence. Number 4. Great thinkers believed humans were evil. Sigmund Freud wrote, "Men are not gentle creatures who want to be loved, who at the most can defend themselves if they are attacked. They are, on the contrary, creatures among whose instinctual endowments is to be reckoned a powerful share of aggressiveness." It's my understanding that when it comes to psychology, a lot of what Freud taught or said or came up with has been discredited. So take that for what it's worth. But before Freud, philosopher Thomas Hobbes had a similarly pessimistic view. He said that man in his natural state is solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. He believed all men were equally capable of killing, and when two people want the same thing, the inevitable outcome is war. Item number 3. Babies are easily bribed. Researcher Arbor Tassimi at Yale University believes his studies prove babies are naturally altruistic. The majority of his tests involve putting toddlers in various situations where they can choose to be selfish or helpful without reward. Surprisingly, in many instances, the toddlers went out of their way to help others even when it was inconvenient and offered no incentive. Regrettably, Tassimi's theories go out the window when a mere cracker enters the equation. The toddlers in the study would quickly side with a bad guy or be unhelpful if it meant getting 3 graham crackers as opposed to 1. Evidently, like most adults, children can be convinced to do wrong if the price is high enough. Greed's a bitch, ain't it? Number 2, we have government. The simple fact that we have any type of government suggests we believe society would spiral into absolute mayhem if there wasn't someone making and enforcing laws. We have very little trust in our fellow man to not steal or kill, so we willingly give up many of our own personal freedoms for the sake of protection. This in itself is pretty strong evidence that we believe a large portion of people aren't innately good. There's only been one anarchistic group that survived for any length of time, and that was in the Ukraine during the years 1918 through 1921. The Free Territory consisted of around 7 million people who lived and worked communally to meet their collective needs, but even they had a makeshift leader in Nestor Makhno. In the end, the Bolsheviks branded the territory as a warlord regime and forcibly overtook their land. Kind of goes to show you, if you don't organize, somebody's going to take your stuff. And lastly, the number one reason that human beings are naturally evil, babies. Twins fight in the womb. Starts early. High clarity MRIs have shown twins fighting for space in the womb by kicking and pushing their sibling out of the way. Doctors initially planned to use the MRIs to study a different, quote, selfish, unquote, condition, twin-to-twin transfusion syndrome, where one identical twin siphons blood away from the other. If saline blood wasn't bad enough, in cases of vanishing twin syndrome, a fetus will absorb their weaker uterine companion until it miscarries or simply, quote, vanishes, unquote, a legitimate survival of the fittest situation. I'd say that, right from the start, we will compete for resources and, in a way, in a manner of speaking, kill for them when necessary. Does that make us inherently violent? That is the discussion. Now next, I'm going to take a look at an article posted by a website called sciencealert.com. The article is titled, Humans Inherited Murder Through Evolution. But honestly, based on the article's content, I find that title a bit deceptive. Anyhow, the article states, a new study has looked back along our evolutionary tree and shown that humans evolved the tendency to kill each other from our primate ancestors. Violence didn't just arise from human nature, as has been suggested in the past. In fact, at the time of our species' origin, humans were killing each other 6 times more often than the average mammal today, which, as it turns out, isn't anywhere near as bad as some of the species out there. A team of researchers from the Estación Experimental de Zonas Áridas and University of Granada in Spain compiled information on more than 4 million deaths across 1,024 mammal species. They used that data to calculate how many of those deaths were the result of violence from a member of the same species and then figured out which mammals are the most murderous. And looking at that, we get a bit of a surprise. According to this chart in this study, the mammal most likely to kill its own kind? I feel like I should insert a drum roll here, but that feels too much like a cheesy morning show. The meerkat. Yes, if you don't know what a meerkat is, M-E-E-R-K-A-T, they are kind of like African ferrets, although they are the part of the same family as a mongoose, not a ferret. They had a show on maybe Animal Planet called Meerkat Manor, and if you've watched that, it's actually not a surprise. They are kind of murderous little creatures. Cute, but murderous. According to my grandfather, who went big game hunting in Africa a few times, they also can make a wonderful pets. There was a rancher, I believe, maybe a guide, I don't remember which, who had a meerkat as a pet, used to sleep in his boot at night. Anyway, so yeah, the full top 30 list is kind of interesting. The top is the meerkat, the bottom is the brown bear. Monkeys are number 2 and 3, and then lemurs 4 and 5 and 6, sea lions, marmots, lion, mongoose, gray wolf, baboons, something I can't even pronounce, a chinchilla, the California ground squirrel, a gazelle, puma, snow leopards, marmots, spider monkeys, Ethiopian wolf, white-throated round-eared bats, great or spear-nosed bats, more lemurs, the mongoose, caracal, African wild dogs, another ground squirrel, capuchins, and then, like I said, brown bears. The article also states that we definitely evolved the tendency to kill each other, but our culture has affected that violence too. The message of the study from our point of view is that no matter how violent or pacific we are in origin, we can modulate the level of interpersonal violence by changing our social environment. We can build a more pacific society if we wish. Now that makes sense. So this thing says that, no, we're not inherently evil, but we certainly have the potential. But amongst mammals who murder each other, we're not even in the top 30. Up next, we have an article that appears on psychologytoday.com titled, Bad to the Bone, Are Humans Naturally Aggressive? And it states, there is no specific physiological or neurological system designed for aggression. Everything involved in the expression of aggression is tied to other systems, and its use in behavior is highly contextual. There is no consistent system or pattern in the human body or mind that we can point out as the seat or the main actor in aggressive behavior. In other words, this article sounds like it's saying violence is something that we learn, not something we're born with, and it's dependent upon context or need, maybe. The article also states, in the human fossil and archaeological record, there is no good evidence of intense aggression and warfare until very recently, and it is associated with the advent of permanent settlements, agriculture, and social stratification, increased social inequity, and more complex political and economic systems seem to correlate with more types of aggression and violence in human societies. Interestingly, these scenarios also correlate with larger and more complex, peaceful relationships amongst and between peoples. So the article is saying that we are not born aggressive, it is something that is learned and depends on context, and that there's nothing, historically speaking, with fossils and the archaeological record indicating intense aggression or warfare until very recently. I don't know if I agree with that last part. As I've discussed earlier with the timeline, maybe it depends on your definition of very recent. Looks like we've almost constantly been at war. If they're talking about going back further than that timeline, well, maybe it's just something we haven't discovered. Heck, for all we know, we've had nuclear weapons or their equivalent before in human history, and they wiped everything out. Would there be anything left? We don't know, do we, technically? Now there's going to be somebody out there who says, well, of course we do, because this, that, and the other. Well, all right, you're free to email me, and maybe we'll discuss it on a future episode. Then finally, the article states that humans can and do engage in a wide variety of aggression. However, aggression is not our primary go-to behavior as successful organisms. There is insufficient evidence to argue that we have evolved a suite of specifically aggressive behaviors to succeed in the world. In fact, it is largely our abilities to get along and to negotiate complex social problems with and without aggression that make humans one of the most successful species on this planet. Well, I suppose I might agree with that. I might also say that most of us seem to be easily manipulated by those with power and influence. But that, again, might be another discussion. Up next, we have an article titled, Human Nature Isn't Inherently Violent, appears on a website called peacecenterbooks.com, written by Alfie Kohn, K-O-H-N. And it's not that long of an article, but it's got lots of interesting points, and I actually kind of found it difficult to pick out just a few, but I don't want to sit here and read the whole thing. One of the major points he makes is the counter to the idea that we are just animals, therefore aggression is just part of human nature. He says, but even animals are not as aggressive as some people think unless the term aggression includes killing to eat. Organized group aggression is rare in other species, and the aggression that does exist is typically a function of the environment in which animals find themselves. I think that's an important point. Does the term aggression include killing to eat? I believe that if human beings had all their creature comforts taken away, if resources became legitimately scarce, society would degrade in a hurry. Violence would quickly become the norm. The article continues. Scientists have discovered that altering animals' environment or the way they are reared can have a profound impact on the level of aggression found in virtually all species. Furthermore, animals cooperate both within and among species far more than many of us may assume on the basis of watching nature documentaries. So again, nature versus nurture, right? He goes on to say that there is a belief that violence is a reflection of the environment, that it is learned. Leonard Aron, E-R-O-N, a psychologist at the University of Illinois in Chicago, observes, TV teaches people that aggressive behavior is normative, that the world around you is a jungle when it is actually not so. In fact, research at the University of Pennsylvania's Annenberg School of Communications has shown that the more television an individual watches, the more likely he or she is to believe that, quote, most people would take advantage of you if they got the chance, end quote. I understand that argument, and I agree with it to a degree, but we are also drawn to that for a reason, and there are those of us in the world who have been taken advantage of nearly constantly. I used to be pretty naive about how bad people could be, even though I was picked on a fair amount as a kid. And then things happen that shape your opinion. I won't get into all my crap here, but I am far more jaded and suspicious than I used to be. Though as I've aged, I've mellowed some about it and just kind of accept it as part of life. Which in and of itself may be kind of sad. Article goes on to say, quote, in order to justify, accept, and live with war, we have created a psychology that makes it inevitable, end quote, says Dr. Bernard Lone, L-O-W-N, co-chairman of International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, which received the Nobel Peace Prize in 1985. Quote, it is a rationalization for accepting war as a system of resolving human conflict. And again, I understand that point too, but at some point, violence becomes necessary. I have only been in a handful of fights in my life, like maybe 3 legit fights. I don't think I'm a violent person. I used to have a very quick temper, but it was the kind of thing where I would rant and rave for a little while, curse and scream, and that's what I would do to blow off steam, and then I would be fine. Today, it's far less likely to happen in public view. But I've often said, and I hope it never happens, if it comes down to it in the dead of night, if I'm woken by an intruder in my home, I keep a loaded pistol by my bedside. Why? Because I'm going to kill someone before they have a chance to hurt me or mine. Period. If you threaten my wife in a way I think is legitimate, and what kind of threat technically isn't legitimate? Nothing's legit until it becomes legit, right? I hesitate to say I'll take the law into my own hands. This could be used against me later, but it is possible. And I don't understand the mindset of those who don't feel the same way, and that includes my wife to a degree. The article goes on to talk about news reporting violence because it sells, and we've talked about that, but it sells for a reason, because we're drawn to it, so it becomes a bit of a circular argument, doesn't it? Are we violent because of our environment and what we see and what's part of mass broadcast? Or is our environment violent because that's who we are? Next up, we have an article titled, Science Suggests That Humans Are Not Innately Violent and Vicious, written by Arjun, A-R-J-U-N, Walia, W-A-L-I-A. The article appears on a site called collectiveevolution.com, and the article concludes with a couple of interesting thoughts or a couple of interesting paragraphs. First, science has yet to prove that violence is built into our DNA. In fact, most of the science available suggests that it's not, that these are learned behaviors given the surrounding environment. Do you really think a baby born in a utopian-type world where there is no scarcity, where everybody's needs are met, where there is no television portraying violence and no war, that it would grow up displaying characteristics of violence? At the end of the day, all of us have a choice, Consider yourself as a tank of gasoline and pretend the world is full of matches ready to light you on fire. Parenthesis, make you angry, close parenthesis. All you have to do is empty your gas, so there is no fuel for the flame. You're always in control. You always have a choice. You dictate your reality with your thoughts, actions, and reactions. It's no longer survival of the fittest. It's survival of the most loving. Anger, aggression, and other similar qualities are all products of the ego, the mind. Sure, violence and anger are characteristics that can present themselves within all of us, but it's always our choice. Interesting thought, and there is truth there. But the world to date has never had a utopia where all needs were met. Resources are finite. That's just reality. Does that mean we're not capable of change? That we're incapable of having something close to a utopian society? I honestly don't know, but it's an interesting idea, and perhaps, well, not perhaps, it is something towards which we should work as a species. Next up, we have an op-ed piece that appeared in the LA Times, written by Luke Glowacki, Glowacki, at the time of the article, January 19th, 2014. Luke was a doctoral candidate in human evolutionary biology at Harvard University. And the article had some interesting thoughts. I'll go over a few. Regarding chimps or bonobos and humans all being violent, remember that chimps are our closest relatives. Biologists believe that early humans as well as chimpanzees faced resource competition, whereas bonobos had less resource scarcity, which allowed a species-specific capacity for peaceful intergroup relations to evolve. And again, the bonobos managed to create peaceful communities with co-dominant males and females in charge. Unlike other chimps, bonobos operate not with a violence-driven ethic, but an ethic that can be described as make love, not war. The article also discusses the fact that hunter-gatherers weren't all peaceful. Says that violent conflict seems to have been common in prehistory. It appears likely that as societies became more sedentary and hierarchical, there was a sharp increase in warfare as groups lost the capacity to move away from each other in times of conflict. Social psychologists have documented what seems to be an innate disposition of humans to classify individuals into in-group and out-group members that can form the foundation for divisions leading to conflict. Are you part of the in crowd or the out crowd? That helps us decide what you are to us. I've had a similar thought. I think that we as human beings have always felt a need to classify, and that it may have a place in terms of how we evolved. We needed to classify what animals were dangerous to us, which ones weren't. What plants were edible, which weren't. Which ones were poisons, which ones were medicinal in value, perhaps. And which people around a given tribe, our given tribe, our people, were dangerous and which were not. Just kind of makes sense to me. This little bit seems to back that up. Taken together, the evidence points to an evolutionary basis for violent conflict, but fortunately the story does not stop there. Warfare is only one part of our evolutionary legacy. The other is that humans evolved to be highly cooperative and responsive to cultural norms, including those that promote peaceful relationships. The article concludes with, our genes don't make us do it. For that, we need culture too. And that seems to be a common theme here, doesn't it? So let's talk about chimps and bonobos for a second. There have been some studies, and I've watched a few documentaries about chimps and how they're violent, how they engage in warfare, cannibalism. They're not the peaceful vegetarians that we once thought them to be. They are meat eaters, or will eat meat. They're really omnivores. And there's one study specifically that I found that seems to have different conclusions depending on who you are and what you want to read out of it. The article appears on nature.com, an international journal of science, and I don't have access to the full article because I'm not paying for it. But the editorial summary states the following. Studies of our closest living relatives, chimpanzees and bonobos, have been influential in efforts to understand the evolution of aggressive behavior in our own species. In recent years, however, the validity of these studies has been questioned by proponents of the human impacts hypothesis, which argues that the occurrence of violence in chimpanzees is mainly the result of human activities. Now, a meta-analysis of studies on chimpanzees and bonobos across Africa reveals that aggression between chimpanzees is the normal and expected product of adaptive strategies to obtain resources or mates. Gotta eat, gotta mate. There you go. That kind of drives us all, doesn't it? And has no connection with the presence or otherwise of human beings. And the abstract talks about the frequency of the attacks that occurred between chimps. Found that males are the most frequent attackers, 92% of participants and victims, 73%. Most killings, 66%, involved intercommunity attacks, and attackers greatly outnumbered their victims with a ratio of 8 to 1. And there's also another article that appears on BBC.com that includes criticisms of the study. And in terms of the bonobos that were observed, there's only one death in 92 years of observations of four bonobo communities. Or one murder, you'd call it. So the bonobos are certainly more peaceful than regular chimps. So to me, this backs up the idea that violence is nourished, if you will, by circumstances. Now, before I get to my conclusion, I wanted to cover one more thing. There's a book called The Sociopath Next Door, written by Martha Stout. I bought it and read it a few years ago, still have the copy. And it is an interesting read. I don't know how valid it is or isn't. In my show notes, I'll include a link where you can purchase the book on Amazon, and I'll also include a book review that is pretty critical of what the author has to say. Martha Stout is a PhD and a clinical psychologist in a private practice. She served on the faculty in psychology in the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School for 25 years. Now, she believes that 4% of ordinary people, that's 1 in 25, possesses no conscience. If that's true, might that not explain the actions that some take in terms of crime or politics or corporate greed or any of the ills that plague our society? Maybe. But what does that have to do with whether or not we're inherently violent? Well, maybe the answer is some of us are, in that they're born without anything restraining them. People like to believe we're born with an innate sense of right and wrong. I think that's probably true most of the time. But to me, it's logical that some simply are not. Some are born without it. And her book covers some of this, and it's interesting food for thought. Think about the frame of mind it takes to get ahead and become a corporate giant, or a politician who makes decisions based on his own best interests, and don't tell me they're not out there. Come on now. There's the line between what I consider normal human greed and self-preservation and what people who seem to lack a conscience are. And if they are sociopaths, if they are born without the ability to empathize, I think it explains a lot. Moving on now. So where do I come down on all this? Are we human beings inherently violent? No, I don't think so. For all that's wrong with the world, there is plenty that is right. There are lots of good people. There are many charities, and there are wonderful human beings in the world who would give their shirt off their back for strangers in need. The way we come to the aid as a nation for people who have experienced disasters, funding sites for people who go through medical problems or who are whose homes go up in smoke, public outreach for them. Just there are almost limitless examples. You don't hear as much about it, though. And we come back to the idea that if it bleeds, it leads. And is that just because it perks our interest more than wonderful feel-good stories? Or is it because we do have a tendency towards the violent? I really couldn't say. I will say, and I do believe, that we all have the potential to be violent. And we should. Life ain't easy, man. The world can be a violent place with or without human beings, and sometimes you have to be violent to survive. It all comes down to a couple of things. First, and I think I've already said this, but I believe it bears repeating, if you take away creature comforts, people start to get edgy. If you take away necessities, if water and food were legitimately difficult to find, how quickly do you think our society would degrade into anarchy, into mass chaos, into survival of the fittest, literally? Yes, we would require some cooperation to bring ourselves back up or to rear crops or perhaps even to hunt food. But there would be pockets of people. It would become tribal very quickly. Second, ultimately, all our disputes are settled and all our laws are enforced by violence or its threat. Consider that for a moment or two. So are we inherently violent? No, but we certainly have the potential. That's what I think, but I could be wrong.
That's what I think, but I could be wrong. That's what I thought when I wrote this song. I say what I believe and I say it's strong. That's what I think, but I could be wrong.
That concludes Season 1, Episode 3 of That's What I Think, But I Could Be Wrong. Are we, human beings, inherently violent? I'm your host, Todd Lorenz, and thank you for listening. Please leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, give me a thumbs up on YouTube, or a positive review on whatever podcasting software you use to help me grow the podcast so I can continue to do this. And please come back for future episodes. I'd appreciate it. If you did not enjoy the show, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you try another one? Maybe it'll be more to your liking. Finally, I finish each show with one of my own songs. I try to tie it into the episode theme whenever possible, and you could say this is somewhat related. The song is called Do the Right Thing, and it comes from my 2014 album, Hope. It is available for free on my website. Enjoy, and until next time, be good.
Let's talk about the state of the world. Everything's screwed up. Leaders lie, ethics die. Living seems so tough. Take a look around. See what I see. Misery, anger, and doubt. Unemployment rising. The economy dying. Believe can't be found. So how do we fix it? What comes next? Is revolution on the way? Do we need to fight for what we know is right? There's always a price to pay. Things don't have to be like this. It's not how it has to be. Our work can heal. Here's the deal. We've just got to do the right thing. We just got to do the right thing. Talk about politics, how our country bleeds. Our souls are sold for corporate gold, feeds the war machine. There's war on terror, war on drugs, endless wars overseas. It all
solves nothing. Problems keep coming, driven by nothing but greed. Can we fix it? Can we get that done? Is a revolution on the way? Do we have to fight for what we know is right? Are we willing to pay the price? Things don't have to be like this. It's not how it has to be. Our world can heal. Here's the deal. We just got to do the right thing. We just got to do the right thing. We just got to do the right thing. Let's talk about religion, what it means to me. Blind faith for its own sake, rather be free. But if you nation control through fear, men of the cloth, fondly little boys. Preachers preach, pray on the weak. When they're at their weakest point, is it worth fixing? Can we be saved? Is a revolution what we need? People love to fight for what they think is right. I have no faith in what they believe. Things don't have to be like this. It's not how it has to be. Our world can heal. Here's the deal. We just got to do the right thing. We just got to do the right thing.